This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
38 minutes after 7 right here on Power Business. Based on the pronouncements made by President Cyril Ramaphosa yesterday, there's been sentiment that the middle class is often forgotten or not prioritized when relief measures are announced. And on the line, we are joined by Chief Economist at IQ Business, Sfiso Skenjana. Thank you so much for giving us your time as always, Sfiso.
Great to be on.
Is it fair that the middle class feels that they are the poor cousins of any economy when we prioritize the less destitute over and above the middle class, which is normally described as being a paycheck away from being destitute themselves?
Which middle class?
That's exactly what I want to get into next, because in South Africa, the middle class is often described as one who is still repaying the debt on their German car, one who is still living in an estate, but that mortgage is far from being paid off. And therefore, in that context, half of us are hardly seen as being needy.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, I really think asked that question in a truly mischievous way, but directed nonetheless. That, you know, South Africa doesn't truly have a middle class. I think we are an economy of pullers, and we've got, you know, 55% of our population living, at or below the poverty threshold, and that's the minimum food poverty threshold, and I think that's about 580 rand per month. We've got 50%. Of our labor force, you know, being attributable to about 1,660, and the average household income coming in at about 3,000. And so if you look then at averages, and then you start to see that these forgotten cousins who are complaining are upper quartile earners in the economy. and it doesn't mean that, you know, we ought to forget about all participants of the economy. But I think sometimes we've just got to contextualize the conversation to understand, you know, what we're trying to do with the initiatives and the response mechanisms that we are trying to put in place.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that we've certainly, I think we started missing a little bit. And there's actually a report that I was actually interestingly working on during the course of this week, where I categorized labor participants into four commuter analogous categories. I said, there's the hitchhiker, you've got the train rider, you've got the bus stopper, and you've got the Uber rider. So, you know, if you look at the drive past any builder's warehouse, you know, and people looking for piece jobs there, that's the hitchhiking model, right? That, you know, they've got thumbs up the road and they'll take any car that goes by.
Yeah.
And then you've got your train riders, you know, and then those are, you know, broadly, for example, your construction workers, et cetera. So if you imagine a metro and how full it gets, I mean, if you hit dead brakes on that thing, how many people can fall off? And these are the things that we're seeing in the economy, how those dead brakes are getting all those people falling off that metro rail. And so, you know, the people who are complaining are probably closer to being bus riders and Uber riders. And that means they've got generally higher labor mobility. And so I think we've got to contextualize even the things that we are crying about to the context of the economy.
Now, let's talk about the one who would be classified as typically middle class, a working individual in South Africa who earns a fairly fair rate in terms of what they take home. They are affording a mortgage repayment. They are affording at least a vehicle. Was the president speaking to that individual?
Yes and no. So I think the president has been speaking to that individual through the earlier initiatives. And so if you remember, the earlier initiatives were around, tax breaks.
Yes.
They were around support mechanisms for businesses. So these middle income people talking about are the ones who are also moonlighting with their own, you know, nail parlor here and there, and their own little bit of a business here and there. And so the first response actually was very much in their favor. And then we had to then, kick and scream and say, well, the challenge is that pandemics and crises tend to exacerbate the incidence of inequality. Mm. And as a result, the most marginalized portions of the economy feel it the worst. And so we demanded a fiscal response that was very socialistic in intent and directly targeted at protecting particularly the marginalized portions of the economy. And I think a lot of what came out from the relief mechanisms we saw yesterday were specifically then talking around how do we cushion the blow for particularly the exposed and the marginalized people on the fringes of the economy.
It's quite interesting that when we talk about the individual in South Africa that is sometimes ignored, we forget to go deeper into who exactly we are talking about. And in comparison to other developing countries, what exactly is the terminology of a middle-class individual? As you said in the beginning, that in South Africa, it is quite difficult to basket and bracket the working class as middle class.
Yeah, I mean, so, and I'll even contextualize, right, is that in South Africa, we've got a minimum wage of 3,500 and we've got a living wage of about 6,800. Mm. And so we've got people that we call working poor. And so they work, but they can't meet their financial, demands by the end of the month. Mm. And that actually is a very big portion of our labor population. And when you contextualize that then to, I guess, asking around what's a more generic view of a middle class? For me, even in those labor clusters I'd be talking about, it would be a semi-skilled or a skilled individual. Mm. Who's got relative safety nets. And now we're talking safety nets in the context of nutrition, health outcomes, labor mobility, and opportunities, economic opportunities. And that would be on balance then the people, those people also whose kind of the wage growth has tended to grow around the inflation mark. And that in a balanced and a very theoretical ideal picture would be the person who would be a middle income person. Mm. It's just that the structure of our economy hasn't lended itself to that. And so it becomes incredibly hard for us to have a meaningful conversation about a real middle class in South Africa.
Do give us a call on 0861-987-000 or tweet us on at PowerFM987 using the hashtag PowerBusiness, and we'll also take your WhatsApp voice notes on 083-30-37093 or your emails on powerbusiness@power987.co.za if you have questions around whether the president was speaking to you as a working class individual in this week's Power Boardroom. We are talking about the so-called middle class, sometimes referred to as the missing middle and the forgotten in some discussions. And we are speaking to a chief economist at IQ Business, Sfiso Skenjana, on this particular topic. I want us to also unpack the issues around the black middle class or the so-called black middle class in South Africa. Is it fair that when we do have these discussions, there should be a differentiation between the black so-called middle class and our other counterparts? Because at times the argument is used that between Dumisang and Jonathan may have had some sort of assistance from at home, while Dumisang has to still go prop up the family home, make it look dandy before they can even get into their own pockets. And when we talk about measures that have been announced to cushion the economic effects of the coronavirus, the president may have been speaking to Dumisang's elderly mother, who is not of working class material, but Jonathan's mother had been working and is not relying on the social grant that has been announced.
It's actually quite an interesting one, and interesting in two lenses. And so the first one, I think, also speaks to around the choices that we make when we are having interventions. I made the example that if you have a generic view around vulnerable people in the economy, you might then go to Department Social Services and you see who's on an income grant, and they probably then fall already just under the list of vulnerable people in the economy. So if you looked at a person, this was the day before the president announced, for example, if you looked at a person who was earning an income from a grant and a domestic worker, you would have ordinarily said, you know, the person on a grant is probably more vulnerable. And then you contextualize, well, 1 month later, the person on the grant would have earned something and a domestic worker wouldn't have earned anything.
Mm.
And then who is truly more vulnerable in that particular context? And so I think even when we talk vulnerability, we've got to contextualize it to the particular interventions that we envisage. You know, but even then going back to the context of, you know, I guess the various tiers in our economy, I think amongst the white people in South Africa, to be specific, there is a middle class in the theoretical way I described it.
Mm-hmm.
We spoke of, you know, opportunity. We spoke of access to quality healthcare, education. These are all the safety nets I would have had. And then, you know, and they're getting by. And that portion of the economy within the white population, for example, exists. And this is why a lot of the arguments around SAA being a vanity asset in the country were so interesting, primarily because, you know, on average, whenever you're on a plane, you'd see, you know, probably 70% white people and the balance, you know, between black, Indian and colored people. And so in that particular context, I think there is a middle class. I think in a black context, I think it truly does become a lot more polarized. You know, you have a lot of have-nots and you've got the handful of haves and there's nothing in between. And we keep talking about this missing middle, and you know, and this missing middle for me is an aspirational space in the sense that we want people in that middle.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you then create an economy that can fill that middle, right? That you know, can ensure that, you know, the pace at which the labor force grows is slower than the pace at which you absorb, right? And that's where the middle, that's where the middle class is. And so even when you go back into the kind of pre-democratic dispensation in South Africa, the black families that were the parents were principals and nurses, etc. That was our context of middle income, primarily because of the fact that you could, you know, have food in your house on average. Kids had opportunities to go to decent, there were relatively more decent schools, and they had relatively more opportunity in that particular context. And so that was a very, you know, contextualized view and a very narrow view in then context of what our middle class was.
And now the picture is totally different. Let's take a call from Joel in Mamelodi using the number 0861987000. You can use that same number to be a part of this conversation. Joel, thank you so much. What is your view this evening?
Thank you very much. I fully agree with your
fees.
The problem that we are having is that indeed the president, in his presentation of the stimulus package, it touches more on business, but also has a significant consideration for the poor in our economy. But the question becomes, when you speak of the middle income group that you are talking of now, how will they benefit significantly? Now, you have the mixed income group in the black communities, one that comes from the private sector and others who are in the public sector, but also those that are entrepreneurs who strive to create wealth, but are dependent entirely on contracts like whether given by government or even the private sector. Now, if those opportunities suddenly diminish, now the question becomes that those people immediately, whether in a period of 3 to 6 months, they bounce back into the bellies of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do we then, in the reconfiguration of our economy coming out of COVID-19, going to structure an economy that is inclusive? Mm-hmm. That one, that the difference between the white middle class and black middle class is that the white middle class will have an economic or financial buffer, of which the black middle class do not have the privilege. And it stems out of a number of reasons that the issue of black tax is a reality. So you have a lot of people that you are looking after, and when economic opportunities suddenly go out, you don't have that particular arrangement. So it is one thing that our economists, who are predominantly black, and their government should be able to help us in restructuring the political economy into the near future, that a significant number of black people, mm-hmm. from whatever levels, whether they're homogeneous, diffuse or clustered, their segment in the economy, would be able to gain an economic leverage, not only in the medium and short term, but in the long term, such that, you know, those that were going to leave behind, being our siblings and kids, yeah. would be able to enjoy these wealth that would have created for them. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Joel, for adding your views. Yes. So there is a conversation to be had in South Africa as to how we contextualize and brand and maybe even categorize this that is the working class. How do we even do that post-COVID? Yes, it's an opportunity right now to have these conversations, but they've been with us for quite a very long time. And do we expect the same status quo to remain?
No, nothing will go back to normal right now. And you know, and whether for good or bad reasons, but what we know for sure is that we are migrating towards a new normal. Mm. And the question is, what will that new normal be? And, you know, I guess from one lens, your guess is as good as mine. But on another one is that, you know, we can certainly talk around what ought to look like. And you know, the gentleman was asking around what inclusive growth is.
Yeah.
And I've always generally been, I think, uncomfortable around how we use certain words in a broad brushstroke approach that doesn't help us inform very granular initiatives that we need.
It ends up meaning nothing.
Absolutely. And so when we talk then inclusive growth, what does a context of inclusive growth look like for hitchhikers? Mm. What is the context for inclusive growth look like for the train riders? And the point that I make, and the point that it becomes so poignant around classifying them at that point in time, because your initiatives become very different at each occupation level, at each skills level. And so if you've got 91% of the people who are unemployed in this country having a matric or less, and therefore, and so you've got to create an economy and a marketplace that can absorb those kind of people if you want to talk about inclusive growth. And so these are the granularities that we need to get into, I think, in this new dispensation, if we can call it that, around how we do, you know, how we do economic planning. We heard our president talk about this is an opportunity for social compacting.
Yeah.
Right? We've seen the fact that businesses can come to the party. We've seen the fact that labor can come to the party, and private sector and civil society can come to the party. And so maybe this was the Damascus moment where we needed a proof point that we truly can be united in effort and in thinking. And so I think, you know, it is truly an opportunity for us to start thinking and leveraging this idea of social compacting as the true lever into economic prosperity as an economy.
Because government can't
do it alone. Private sector can't do it alone. Labor can't do it alone. And one of the arguments I had when I spoke at the CCMA Labor Conference, and I told them, I said, there were unions in the room. I said, how many union leaders here have gone to corporate in a proactive way around how to help them do research around skills migration and skills preservation? You know, how do we ensure we don't have hostile relationships with our stakeholders?
Mm.
And this is the thinking that we ought to think about right now around, you know, migrating in towards an economy that can work for everyone who lives in it.
Absolutely. Let's take the last call from Ramano in Pretoria. Good evening, Ramano. What's on your mind?
Evening. How are you, Austin-san?
I'm well. Thank you so much.
I'm great. I won't be aligned with your topic tonight, but I just want to raise the issue of the e-hailing services.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of them. We are not. The president, when allocating the fees yesterday, I never heard him saying something about us.
Mm.
And then I don't know if we we are in, or we are on another industries that I never heard of.
Let me ask this, Ramano. You are still operating, right? Even with the restrictions, you are still operating.
Yes, but the taxi industry has been the allocation was made to Santaco, which we are not part of it. So I don't know about us, because the money that we are making at the present moment is it's not enough.
It's reduced because not everybody is traveling. Thank you for raising that. Sviso, another industry that feels left out. Is it fair for e-hailing services to be comparing themselves to a taxi industry that has been around in South Africa for far longer?
It is fair. I think they are in the same sector. And I think, you know, one of the things that you know, I think it's incumbent also on entrepreneurs, and I guess the e-hailing model is tends to model entrepreneurship in one form or another. Is the ability to pivot, right? Is we are now in a context where, you know, certain labor participants are essential workers and others are not. And we're going to get into a point, for example, where our health system is going to be under a lot of pressure. Our ambulances are going to be short-staffed, etc. How many of these, you know, Uber vans, for example, are thinking of converting their Ubers, laying down the seats and making them ready to transport someone on a bed? And these are some of the things that we also, I think, is incumbent on us as entrepreneurs to think around. What does it mean to pivot as a business owner? Because the changing market dynamics is not just on the basis of big global macro shocks. Shocks also happen at the micro level, and businesses have to pivot. And I think this is more of an encouragement around, you know, the business owners to also, you know, not only depend on government initiatives to help, you know, sustain their businesses, but also for them to continuously innovate to see in which ways they can continue to participate in a changing market dynamic.
And that's exactly what is needed in this new normal. Thank you so, so much for always giving us your time. That is Chief Economist at IQ Business, Sviso Skenjana. We are talking about the so-called middle class in South Africa, exploring the fragility thereof, of this, in inverted commas, group of individuals, especially after many raised concerns around whether President Cyril Ramaphosa was speaking to that particular category of individuals in his address yesterday, or maybe just addressing the business sector as well as the underprivileged in the country.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.